Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and right now, X-Men 97. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete, 97.
What, 97?
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, wow. What? What are you talking about? You're 97 years old?
Yep.
He's the 97 vintage of Pete.
Yeah, that's when right. I peaked. I peaked in 97.
Peak's Pete. Pete's peak is what I was trying to say.
Wow.
I will mention up top here, just if anybody asks this question, sometimes I look through Google Trends about the show and you see a lot of questions that people are asking. One that popped up today when I was checking was, why is it called X-Men 97? And the answer is because there are 97 members of the X-Men. So that's what it's referenced to, just in case anybody was wondering.
Did anybody ask why it's called Fire Made Flesh? Does anybody ask that?
Well, you are asking that right now, and that's what we're going to be talking about.
Oh!
Episode 3, wow. Fire Made Flesh. If you haven't watched it on Disney Plus, we're going to get into spoilers here. But I'll give a brief little bit of recap of the absolutely bonkers stuff that happened in this episode. Pick it up on the cliffhanger of the last episode, where a second Jean showed up at the door. What we discover is this was all a plot by Mr. Sinister, who created a clone of Jean Grey at some point in the past, replaced Jean with this clone, who gave birth to the baby, Nathan Christopher Charles Summers, in order to create the ultimate mutant whatever, whatever. If you've read the comics, you know why. They don't really talk about it in the issue.
They keep it pretty cool in this episode of television.
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense if you don't know what's going to eventually happen, because it's like, I created the ultimate baby and now I'm going to kill him? Question mark. I guess we'll see what happens. Because he infects him with a technogorgonic virus. At the same time, he takes over this clone Jean. She becomes the Goblin Queen and morphs, no pun on morph, into a nightmare version of itself, bringing everybody's worst fears to life. Ultimately, they fight in Mr. Sinister's Frankenstein's castle. They manage to turn clone Jean back to the side of good. Mr. Sinister almost gets blasted in half, but manages to escape. And then even more stuff happens as Nathan is infected with this virus. Of course, we're going to go back. We're going to talk about individual things. But Nathan gets infected with this virus, and the only way of curing him is Bishop takes him to the future to be
the old future
somebody
cure
who has expertise in this.
Just take him to the future.
We'll talk about that in a second.
Everything's better in the future.
Yeah, everything's better.
That's what we said back in 97. Yeah.
Also, in the middle of all of this, Storm, who has lost her powers, not at the middle, at the very
end
here.
She
goes day drinking. She meets up with Forge, which is going to lead into one of the most lauded X-Men storylines of all time. And last but not least, my favorite moment of the episode, Clone Jean decides her name going forward is going to be Madeline Pryor.
That's
right. And I'll say why that was my favorite moment, because, like, why? What? Yeah. Where did that come from? What is that in relationship to? That was, in an episode of Crazy Things Happen, that was the craziest.
Well, and that's what a question I have is, like, is this show for only us? Like, it's, you can't watch, I can't imagine a person watching this show without having underlying knowledge about the comic.
Or the earlier series, at least the pace of the earlier series of.
So I think this episode is an interesting one there, and I think we're all sort of on the same page here. Pete was definitely, this is too paced up in the first two episodes. Justin, and I were like, no, faster,
more,
make it faster,
more harder, stronger, more purified.
I hope you're happy now.
That this, South American cocaine of animation, let's go.
I do think, even though I enjoyed this episode, this was too much. And
thank you.
You're in the Pete camp.
Well, I think there's a specific reason that this also comes back to like being a fan of this stuff for so long where I can't filter this out. I've talked about this on the podcast a lot. Inferno, which this is the loosest of all possible adaptations of, is my favorite X-Men storyline of all time. I love how that was paced out, all the lead up to it, all the repercussions, how it spilled into the entire Marvel line. It's great. I love everything about it. This was like, we're going to do Inferno and the Mr. Sinister clone storyline and Madeline Pryor and also Nathan Summers getting taken all at the same time. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. You could do two of those things, but like take a little time here for
I'm something. Sorry, but this episode proves that you can do more than two of those things. I wrote in my notes, Inferno! Exclamation point. Alex going to love this. And later, dot, dot, dot. But too fast.
You called it.
Predictable. Wow.
It's almost like we know each other.
This episode made me go back and watch the prior one to see if I could catch.
Prior.
To catch prior. When they slipped in the jeans. And you can tell in the episode before this, Jean Grey is normal. And then she has a referee outfit on for no reason.
Yes.
That's when they switched.
That's when they swapped.
Not to take a little side trip here, but Pete, can you talk about the last time you slipped in your jeans?
Pete,
I'm sorry that you're so Madeline about the prior episode. Because I think it's pretty good.
I mean, there's so much that happens. Also, by the way, Wolverine gets his fucking heart ripped out for, you know, like the 100th time.
I think it Wolverine, everything's coming up Wolverine soon because who knows? He was there. He was there for real Gene.
Here's the other thing that I would say is a little weird about
Wolverine
this.
Wolverine never get nobody the wants comic storyline. The little angry guy. Trust me on this one.
Uh-oh. So, in the comics, without getting too deep in the continuity, because legitimately I do not remember all of it, but Madeline Pryor was a character that was introduced as a redhead after Jean Grey died, and there were always hints that like something was going on, but it was very much one of those Chris Claremont, does he have an idea, or is he just dragging this out for years at this point, until eventually it was revealed that she was part of Mr. Sinister's plot, she was a augmented Jean Grey clone, and it was, this is the spoiler here that we were talking about earlier, in case they do it on the show and you don't want to know, Mr. Sinister created Nathan Summers, infected him with the techno-organic virus to make him the perfect warrior to fight Apocalypse, another X-Men villain. I assume that's probably the direction they're going in, because also the guy at the end, they're like, I'm going to take you to a guy who knows all things about the techno-organic virus of the future. It's probably Cable. So baby Cable is going to be Cable. But the thing it's about Madeline Pryor is like, she is a Jean clone, but she's different. Here in this show, it's two genes who seem to be exactly the same, except one of them controlled by Mr. Sinister. So if Mr. Sinister's whole goal was to get a baby from Jean and Scott, it feels like that might have happened anyway.
Well, yes, except I don't know. I don't know what happened. Because I was going to say, except Jean died, but unless he came up with this plan in the very short amount of time when she was dead, that was the only time he had to do it, would have had to do it this way.
Yeah, it's just maybe there's more revelations to come because, you know, I trust this show now after three episodes. So they're going to figure out a way to kind of make it work. But like there was a lot of stuff in this episode that just hit the pedal to the metal without a lot of explanation.
Yes. Yeah, I mean,
boiled down.
At points, you guys had to be like, wow, this is insane. Like, I'm
still in the insane. I love this. I like the pace.
I'm having
a
good time, except when it's ripping out my heart and not making any sense. But it's just breakneck speed here, insanity.
It's boiled down. It's given us like the pure.
No. Boiled down means like makes sense, easy, like only a couple ingredients. This is fucking fried up, is what it is. There's no boiling down. This shit's insane, bro.
Wow. This don't eat it either of our restaurants.
And spices in its special recipe. I'll also mention, like, not to keep picking at little things, but very similar to the Madeline Pryor thing, it also bothered me a little bit when she's like, I'm the Goblin Queen.
Queen, yeah.
And I was like, why? Why are you the Goblin?
Dude, I thought you would love that. It's a tie-in in your favorite movie of all time.
Gremlins 2?
Labyrinth?
Yeah.
Oh. No, it's a different thing. I do like the new Goblin Queen costume on the show. I think that's good because not that I have a huge problem with nudity, but it always bothered me, like the weird under boob showing costume that she has. Mm-hmm. It's very exploitative. I felt this was a better way of hitting it. But I don't know why she's the Goblin Queen. If she was like, I'm Miss Sinister or
something. She's clearly trying on names. She was like, ah, I'm the Goblin Queen. I'm Inferno. you know what? Call me Madeline Pryor.
Mm-hmm. Maybe she read Inferno. And that's where she got these ideas.
Ooh. Yeah, probably.
I mean, I don't mind it because I think the justification in the show is that her brain was shattered by this revelation. And so she's just like, I guess I'm going flashing to this Frankenstein imagery, which a Goblin Queen could be there in that castle.
Sure. Yeah, why not? A couple of things that I did like, just to be positive.
You're saying, though, in the comic, you're like, Goblin Queen makes perfect sense, no notes.
Yeah, because she's aligned with Limbo, which is a hell dimension.
Yeah.
Versus here, it's like Mr. Sinister, he lives in a creepy castle, but I don't know why she's a Goblin Queen. I don't know why
she's... I just think in hell it's more of demons and devils and goblins.
She'd be a demon queen. That would have been fine. Why don't we travel back in time with Cable and Bishop, and we'll change the history of X-Men and be like, this doesn't quite make sense.
Yeah, let's fix the names. I love how Bishop is so chill about like, I'll take this baby to the future.
Yeah, that was a really fucked up ask. Like, hey, can you drop everything you're doing and just take my baby into the future?
He took it in total stride.
What about Cyclops' thing where he's like, I can't be part of abandoning my baby because my father abandoned me. And then leaves.
He leaves. He goes, I can't be here for abandoning my baby. I have to abandon my baby right now. I will not stand for abandoning my baby.
That was crazy too, but I did really like the body acting there when he crumples and he walks off like a sad Peanuts character. You're talking about
the animation? Well, there's no actors actually doing any acting.
I don't know.
How that works. They do, it's mocap. It's mocap.
It's not mocap. Like, this is 97, bruh.
I like, you know, obviously Scott's catchphrase, to me, my X-Men, famous. And now his new catchphrase, go away, my baby, is bound to catch on as well. But let's take it back to the top. I have a couple
things. Do you think it works if you just kind of like, as you're about to give away your baby to somebody that you kind of know, it's like kind of a work friend, that you just kind of mind meld with them and be like, hey, whatever you do, don't think we're shitty parents. Okay, here, take my baby. You think that works? You think that's cool?
I mean, I'm sure the techno-organic virus, maybe they emailed in to the virus itself and said, hey, sorry, love you.
It also seemed like a pretty big portal that they all could have walked through, potentially. Just throw that out there.
No, the wristband said only one. One person plus a baby.
You know how it is outside of clubs. If you don't have a wristband, they don't let you in.
Yeah, plus, it's like when you fly in a plane, you can take one baby on your seat.
Yeah, Nathan was a lap baby. In that case.
Lap baby, yeah.
I'm sorry, the time portal. I know you guys travel bougie, but you travel in a section where it's like take a baby, leave a baby type of situation where you can travel with a baby if you want, but you got
to
give it back.
Everybody wants to travel. There's no better way to travel than with a baby. So, of course.
I'm trying to understand this thing where you were like, saying it's like a lap baby.
It's like toothpaste. You have your big toothpaste and then your baby toothpaste. And so you have your travel baby.
I just got one more parenting question. How often when you guys are maybe sleep deprived and kind of like changing a child that your little baby walkie-talkie talks to you in a different voice?
It's right before I say, I'm the Goblin King.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. So can I mention one other thing that happens in the middle that maybe you were going to get to, Justin? But we touched on Wolverine before. As crazy as this whole Gene Maddie thing is, I love how they are setting up the Gene, real Gene, Wolverine relationship.
100%.
Don't give it an excuse.
Don't play with my emotions. They're not setting up anything.
It's happening.
Oh my God. They're not setting up anything. They gave each other. They absolutely are.
It's just heartbreak for Wolverine.
We're going to get Gene, who technically probably never married Scott. Never had a baby with him.
Definitely.
And is now like, I need to figure out who I am now. And part of that, I think, is going to be getting with Wolverine.
Plus, it's awkward for her to date Scott, who already married another her. Like, that's just weird. So, like, I definitely think, like, the moment when Scott's, like, dealing with all of the sinister baby stuff, Wolverine's there kicking game. And that's what a time. His mutant power is not giving a fuck about decorum. He's in there putting out the vibe.
Hey, he didn't. The funk. You know, you heard the leader. He was like, yo, Wolverine, you stay back and emotionally be there for Jean in a way that Scott never could.
I don't know if that was a line in this television
show. I think
show.
That's exactly what Magneto said word for word, I think.
How about Magneto just front and center on the come up here? He's in the opening
just
credits.
Just being like, yo, Cyclops, you get to the bench. I'm running this now.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought you were going to bring up Magneto and Rogue gooping into each other.
No, they put the danger in danger.
Have you ever done that with anybody?
Room.
Because it feels bad.
I've gooped. Yeah. I'm gooped. I mean, you're talking about the sort of fantasy nightmare sequence, but they had the Danger Room booked for fucking. That's an
it
extra
was
danger.
It's weird show. How, like, Morph kept clicking, and they were like, no, it's still scheduled. We're going to have a real
scenario,
session.
Though, right? Like, that was part
that
of
that was pre-nightmare,
no,
my
that?
Guy.
Okay, but
it was pre-nightmare.
I wish I could give credit. I didn't write it down, but somebody online was like, "Oh, they were doing stamina training."
Yeah, exactly. Good joke. I mean, the subplot. I mean, there's like 50 subplots happening all the time, but the fact that Gambit's like, "I'm so sad over here," is very funny.
No, he did not say that. He said, "Gambit, so sad over here." Yeah,
he Remy LeBeau, so sad over here, sugar.
What do you think about this? I have been wanting to ask you guys about the Magneto Rogue thing because we don't have an exact age, but Rogue is like mid-20s, and at the very least, Magneto is like mid-60s, late-60s, something like that, depending on where we are in the sliding scale. Not to get too into it, but there's been a lot of discussion online about this very much May-December romance. How do you feel about it?
Is Rogue mid-20s? Is that canonically true?
No, we don't know. Like,
yeah,
we
I think
know
she's
that
older.
She might be, but she was...
There's still a 30, 40-year difference here is what the point is.
I would say there's probably 30. A 30-year difference is where I would put it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so not to throw. I feel like we're sort of like treading on worrisome waters here with this conversation.
Well, I'm just saying more so what my take on their age difference is, as opposed to saying that she's like 24 and he's 65. I'm like, I don't think that's what anyone in the show is trying to put out there. But yeah, I also it's a little bit. I think they have a history also. So I don't know. And I also we don't know if this Magneto is as old as the Magneto that we know from the comics. Like this Magneto wasn't in World War II, I think.
As a baby, he could have been thrown forward in time. You know what I mean? Just thrown to the future to, because he had some kind of virus or something.
I don't know. I mean, it's an animated superhero fantasy, so whatever. And Magneto is in whatever age he is and is jacked as hell. So,
yeah. It's all good. I will say that I do think it's strange because this was a plot in the comics as well. If you hadn't heard that, like, and it's a strange story to put front and center on your launch of this new show, especially when like it's not like they don't. That we have a ton of love triangles already. Mm-hmm. So, like, why are we, like, creating one that does have these age gap issues and, you know, Rogue and Gambit aren't really together? So it's sort of like they already have that will they, won't they, and
how
now they have, like,
dare
will
you
they,
say
won't they, and
that.
A problem. They're not. They're famously not.
Together.
I don't think so.
That's what the show makes us want to feel like is they are together. Then why is he so sad?
Because he likes her. He likes her.
Right. And that's because the show makes us think that they're together.
As I recently watched in the original series, though, Gambit was secretly married to the head of the Guild of Assassins, and they were paying a tithe to the externals. And that's when he was brought back to the Bayou, where he had to reckon with the Guild of Thieves, his guild.
Yeah, we all remember that.
We all remember that.
Yeah.
So everyone's got
that actually reminds me, I forgot to open the specific schedule, but I know in the last episode we were talking about how I never watched the original series and I was so confused about that. So I did actually go back and find the old Saturday morning TV schedule for X-Men from the date it premiered October 31st, 1992 and forwards.
Halloween, yeah, sure.
And at first I was like, oh, okay. Here's why I didn't watch it, because it was originally the premiere was on at 11:30 a.m. and then it moved to 11 a.m. And usually by that point, I was not watching cartoons at all. But then upon further reflection, I looked at the whole lineup and I was like, I didn't watch any of this stuff. I didn't watch Saved by the Bell. I didn't watch anything that was on. And I was like, oh,
you didn't watch 227?
And then I realized the actual reason was I was out having a good time with friends and living my life.
Oh, don't give us that bullshit. Like
losers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Sorry. When are
you're
we going to
cool
watch
nerd? You're the cool nerd in front of your Lego fucking sculpture, you dickhead.
That's not when mine. Is Alex and his friends?
From. Oh, yeah.
When is Alex and his friends 97 premiering on Disney Plus?
Yeah, right.
I can't wait to watch that.
After these messages.
No, but in all seriousness, actually, what I realized was that was the period where I had started doing theater and stuff in high school and was hanging out with friends and doing rehearsals and had given up. No, seriously. And like give it up or pretended to give up reading comic books and doing that stuff. So I got away from it for a while. So that's why I missed it.
Who are you talking to right now? You're talking to your young, are you trying to appease who and what?
There's one jock who listens to this podcast, and if I don't say this, he's going to beat the shit out of me.
I hope he does.
Jock.
I hope he does, too.
Can't wait to slip
in these jeans. You know what I'm talking about?
We all know exactly what
which jean.
It's funny that you – I've never fallen out of love with comic books or anything. I just
– oh, okay. That's cool.
Went through it. What happened to you, Alex? And let me say, hey, Alex, if you've cheated on us once before, aren't you going to cheat again?
Yeah, that's also true. That was something several decades ago. So
I did really like in the show how, like, when there was second Gene revealed, like, Scott was immediately in trouble. Like, he had no idea whose Gene was who, and he was just like, I can't tell them apart. I thought that was very enjoyable.
I love just the pure awkwardness of all of that. They played it for the comedy. They actually slowed down, I feel like, at that moment.
Yeah, we sat like, that moment a little bit. Yeah. How do you tell this Gene from that Gene?
I'll also say, though, I was weird about the Inferno storyline as a whole. I thought there were so many great moments in there. All the nightmare stuff felt Miyazaki a little bit.
Yeah, sort of, it was so well animated, I thought.
Oh, my God. Really everybody's good. Heads turning, the demonic Professor X, everything like that was great. And also the... I should have written down what he says, but in the moment where they're sucked into hell and it's Cyclops charges up Bishop, right? By shooting him in the back.
Yeah, that was a crazy, all of a sudden I have this new move that I can do. Yeah. Hey, Cyclops, murder me with your visor. What? Well, I was like, you can't just shoot you in the back, Bishop. What are you doing? And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, no. If that I put it on this one setting, great. I don't murder people. I energize them.
Well, it's interesting because I feel like, I don't know, we've seen things like we talked about the fastball special, which people don't know,
which is
Colossus tossing Wolverine, but something
move.
In the more modern comics that they've pushed quite a bit is this idea of a mutant circuit that you can get mutants working together with their powers, which is something we haven't really seen exactly in the show. They're usually individually doing stuff, not charging each other up. And this gets towards it, and it's cool. It's something that I don't think I have ever seen Bishop.
What are you talking about? Like a Voltron situation where if they're standing close to each other or if they're touching that they become more powerful or something?
It's more like a video game secret move, I feel like, is the way it's played. I think it's great.
Special move?
Yes, especially.
What else? We're about 20 minutes in. You wanted to go back to the beginning of the episode, Justin?
Yes. Well, I wanted to go back in about 15 to 18 minutes ago. I want to talk about Morph real quick. We see some of his pathos. The way that he's changed from being like the face they gave Morph in the original series is so strange. And I love that they just dispense with that. But we get a little bit of it in this as a callback, which I thought was cool. And then the way that they're having Morph be our, like, nostalgia check, we get him. He randomly becomes Spiral, the six-armed woman from Mojoverse.
Yeah.
I was like, yo, great deep cut. And then we get another two-part cut where he becomes Ilyana. Mm-hmm. And then Magic back-to-back from – which I thought echoes the Inferno-ness of it. I was like – really cool. And that he fought as her for a bit. right? So it was like, that's great. That just keeps, that keeps the pace up in a fun and surprising way.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I believe the popular agreement on our Patreon Slack, based on the discussion last week, is that in fact Morph is creating things out of pieces of his skin. So Ileana's soul sword is actually like his skin and bones that he's fighting with.
Ugh. As opposed to what? His insides? Like his organs?
Yeah, I guess it could be his organs. As opposed to having a sword. Like the sword is a piece of his body that he's fighting
with. Yes, I agree with that. But I think he has to be careful, because if he, like, you know, ends up, when he's creating the sword, putting some of his more sensitive parts of his body in the tip, could be really
like painful. He goes to stab somebody, he's like, that's my spleen.
Yeah.
Do you think we talked about the giant baby enough that we saw in the...
You mean Nathan?
Yeah, where it was just like this giant nightmare dream baby that was just kind of like...
That was cool. I will say the regular Nathan.
As a parent, was it really hard? Because I was watching it and being like, oh my God, Mr. Sinister, you can't just put a baby in kind of like a bowl of goo and then just shut the lid on it and walk away. That's not how you care for babies. Oh, you can. You can kind of put there's like a crock pot for babies that you can just kind of put them in and with some Joker ooze. And
yeah, put a little barbecue sauce in there, let it stew for a while.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's where I would think
it would be the other way, because you guys are a father and you have cared and love for little things, that like it would be, you would just see stuff like that and be like, oh, my God, this is so...
Well, so here's the thing. I did for a little while, and then at a certain point, I got friends and started doing theater, and I stopped caring about my kids.
Oh, my God. I get it. You have a girlfriend in Canada. We believe you, all right?
Yeah, like, the flex on Alex, seventh grade Alex, going to play rehearsal is crazy.
Just like, I went back and looked, because why wouldn't I watch this show? It doesn't make any sense. And it's when I swore you guys all off and tried to be cool.
The understudy for Nathan really Detroit and Guys and Dolls? Well, goodbye. I'm burning my comic books. Goodbye, my personality. I'm this now.
Sitting backstage, whispering Rock of the Boat to myself three nights in a row. And then I'm done.
Really great.
And then I'm done.
Really fun.
What'd you guys think of the Storm would have believed me line?
Sad.
Didn't really strike me, to be honest.
I was like, that's odd. That it was kind of almost like being like, hey, remember Storm?
I believe it was like, Storm is a part of this team, technically.
Still part of this. You know?
She's about to meet her future boyfriend, maybe, in the end of the episode.
Oh, yeah. Spoilers, bro. Come on.
Anything else from the episode you guys wanted to call out?
Yes. Alex, you must have loved when Rogue said English sugar.
Ugh.
Your least favorite type
that
of
is.
Line?
Did you like that.
Jane Doe? Did you like that? Did you Jane Doe? No, I didn't like that.
Hit his hush puppies into his stomach. Great.
Yep.
Gonna go see about a redhead, one of them. Great stuff. Ooh.
Did you guys know, I feel like probably a lot of people do this, but I just found this out this week, that between being Rogue initially and now, the voice of Rogue has been in the Nova Scotia government?
I didn't know that.
Yes, I'm forgetting her exact title, but she is like a legit leader of the Nova Scotia government. I think she got voted out, or somebody else got her position, whatever you call that, recently, like in the past couple of years. But yeah, for years she's been running the government of Nova Scotia.
My Nova Scotia rival is like a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs. Sugar. how does that southern accent play in Nova Scotia? I guess Nova Scotia is technically the south of Canada. So
exactly.
It's the same.
So it's the same thing.
Yeah.
They get it.
They're drinking sweet tea on the porch up there in Nova Scotia.
It's frozen solid, but yes.
I love the way, just the two sort of, I don't know if this is purposeful, but the animation, the way that techno-organic virus looked sort of just as shitty as it did in like the early 90s on Nathan, I thought was very funny. A, and B, I feel like, I don't know why they draw Nathan, like, he looks like a middle-aged man. He looks like, he honestly looks like John Lovitz as the critic in that old animated show.
Nice. Good call, yeah.
And I was like, he's not a baby, he's like a weird old middle-aged man.
Yeah, in The Critic, he was also dealing with a techno-organic virus, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So.
That forced him to say, it stinks. Gotcha. I got you.
Jay Sherman. Love Jay Sherman. Yeah. That show was good. We should do that one next after we're done with X-Men 97.
Definitely. And anyone who knows what we're talking about, please raise your hand. Oh, no hands? No hands in all of the audience?
I used to watch that during the period when I was not reading comics.
Yeah, your cool friends were really into John Lovitz's animated Sick friends. Like,
I love this show about therapy.
That's it. Anything else before we wrap up here? All right, why don't we
Don't get my goddamn hopes up with the that was just painful. It was just too painful to watch the Jean and Wolverine of it all. Like, I was you guys didn't have to reopen this wound.
No, they're going for it.
They're going for it, and spoiler, Pete, it will also be painful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't we haven't done this in a while. We talked about it the last episode, but why don't we go to our vision board? What are you looking forward to? What do you think is going to happen in next week's episode?
Next week's? I don't have a direct prediction, but the Seeing Forge, are we going to get the whole Australia Siege Perilous?
No. We're going to get Life Death. Right. Which is the storyline where, spoiler, she gets her powers back. You probably knew that was going to happen. That's going to be, I don't know how they're doing this, but they're doing it as a two-parter, and one of the episodes has another storyline. So I think they're doing it as like a one-and-a-half-parter, kind of, or something like that.
Yeah, but don't you think, something about that last scene made me think that, will they go to all of the Reavers and Siege Perilous and all that?
Like, I love that. I love the Australia era. Yeah. That would be great. I feel like probably this season we have the Mr. Sinister thing as the overarching plot. We're probably heading towards a big war with Apocalypse at the end or something. Was he in the original series?
Oh yeah, big time. Yeah. So I must watch. I'm making my way through the original series. There's the underlying plot of the season I'm on, I guess season two, is that Professor X and Magneto are in the Savage Land. Mm-hmm. Fighting Mr. Sinister and the Nasty Boys. The fact that his guys are the Nasty Boys is crazy. Mr. Yeah. Sinister, I'm a scientist who's perfecting mutants, and these are my Nasty Boys. It's crazy.
And I'll just mention on the podcast, if you don't listen to our review show, they just, the Stack, they just released a X-Men 97 number one from Marvel Comics that is a prequel to this TV series, and the Nasty Boys are in that too. They're back.
That's what I was going to say. Is we randomly got to get Savage Land thrown in here at some point while we're blasting through story arcs here.
Well, I'm going to keep blasting through the original series and keep you updated on just how much ground they covered there, because they're probably not going to go back and redo any of those storylines. No. So it is interesting. That show, the original series, chewed up so much X-Men continuity that I think they do have to get a little bit weirder. But I am surprised they blew through Inferno in this one episode.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I think my big prediction for the next episode is I think we're going to see some significant progress on the Jean and Wolverine storyline, frankly. But
agree.
We got to get the White Queen in there at some point, too.
So she can come after Scott? Is that what you're saying? So they can have head sex. Nice.
What?
So they can head slip sex. In those jeans.
Well, she is in the opening credits, right?
Mm-hmm.
White Queen. So I think that's a great call, Pete. Oh, let me also say Lalandra sighting in the opening credits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What? Well, why?
So maybe this is spoilers for the end of the series, but I believe Professor Xavier is not dead. He almost died and then was taken into space by the Shi'ar. So that's going to come back at some point as well. That's a spoiler for season five, which came out in 1995 or whatever. So don't worry about it. Anyway, if you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at
7 p.m.
to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about X-Men 97, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice. To subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more, until next time, stay marvelous.
What's that? A small role in Chicago? Yeah, I'm done here.